This is the second plenary session, a panel on solar system exploration, technology for future missions. There are four panelists. So with that, I would like to now open the discussion to questions from the audience. If the panel could come up to the front, and hopefully there will be some questions. We will have stimulated some thoughts about the challenges ahead.
All of you have been involved in what's been entirely government-sponsored activity, and we now have the first proposal to have some commercial activity doing some of the things that you've done, like building a spacecraft to go out and take measurements at an asteroid. Do you think this is a trend? How will this affect what you do? Will it make what you do cheaper, enable you to do some other things?
Peter, do you want to comment?
Well, this is true. Well, government member states sponsored. In ESA, we recently, not in the science directorate, which I'm representing, Wells, a study to land something on the moon by the year 2000. Catch what was Euromoon 2000. And the idea here was to get private sponsoring. I personally find this a very attractive, interesting thought. There were some inquiries done. Very positive reaction from many people, particularly the young one. And, well, we were ready to give a Dutch guilder or 10 German marks or a few francs. And ultimately, it was not further pursued, because it was felt was technically too ambitious for 2000, landing near the crater of eternal light and the South Pole for ice. And, the agency was not daring enough, and also participating industry, all that. So that would put a rest, but it's an interesting thought, and I'm sure this will come back.
Also in Japan, that every science mission is done by governmental finance support. And I think that still that no commercial company cannot support any other science mission, because that there is no profit. Still that we are working with under my governmental financial support, I think.
In Russia, Russian Minister of Finance tried to convince Russian Space Agency to get alternative sources of funding for a space program. But up to now, they probably do not succeed in that, in spite of quite a pressure from government.
Well, I think the key to commercialization of space is clearly to reduce the cost of getting into space, the cost of the systems that go into space. That's what we're focused on trying to accomplish through the innovative technologies, so that, in fact, commercial enterprises won't have to make such a big investment in order to put a system into space, and therefore can more easily have a business plan which allows them to show a cash flow that will return the kind of profit they need on their investment. So I think that certainly a key to opening up the frontier space to much greater participation than is currently the situation is to make the right kinds of investments in reducing the cost of launch significantly by huge factors, and by reducing the cost of the systems that go into space. Next.
I'm Jerry Soffin. I was a project scientist on the Viking missions. One of the most difficult problems we had was the problem of planetary protection. The question of how you make sure you don't get a false positive when you're in. All four of you who have an interest in exobiology one way or another. We've made great advances in technology and communications and batteries and so forth, but I'm not aware of very many advances in finding out how to make sure that the spacecraft that we land on Mars don't detect the very things that we send there. I wonder what precautions any of you have taken or are prepared to talk. At the time that we did this, the then Soviets and Americans had agreements through international relationships, but those connections have almost died now, and I just wonder whether any one of the four of you have addressed this very difficult problem, which won't go away.
I think we're just in the beginning stages of trying to understand what the requirements are going to be that will assure us that we don't just bringing back life that we carried there, and of course at the same time to make sure that whatever we bring back safely. So those are major challenges. It's another part of the technology which I didn't mention, which is clearly part of the road mapping activity we have underway now, and we need to engage a wider community to make sure that we are smart about what we're trying to do. But certainly the search for life elsewhere is a challenging one from a biological point of view.
Certainly the reduction in instrument mass has been an enabling feature for these new missions, but there's also a change in philosophy from something like Cassini, where all sciences and all instruments would kind of gang load on one spacecraft, to reducing this to very focused missions. Can you say a little bit about what the science return is in this new philosophy as compared to the second stage that Ed Stone mentioned?
Well, let me comment. I think that it's not a question of either or. When you want to find out what's out there globally, I think the most cost-effective way to do that is to fly very comprehensive missions, which are, if you like, wide band. So whatever's there can be observed globally. But at the same time, if you now want to do surface exploration, it's clear you need to be able to go more than one place a decade. That you do need focused missions. Surface exploration is in many ways fundamentally different from global exploration, and we have the technology for global investigation, and that will continue to happen when appropriate. What we need to do is develop the technology for in situ exploration and for returning samples. If we want to understand whether there's life on Europa, eventually we're going to have to get down onto Europa. You don't need a large observatory-class mission. What you need is a mission which is dedicated to very specific technology which will allow us to do something on Europa, perhaps to blast something off the surface like Mesa C will do on an asteroid, or perhaps bore melt through into the ice down further in the ice where it's not being irradiated. These are the kinds of technical challenges which change the nature of the system. It doesn't mean one's better than the other. They're just doing different jobs from a scientific exploration point of view.
I have two questions. First one to ESA. It's about the Mars Express. Can we have information about the lander? Because there was four proposals. And do you know what is the status now of this selection? And the second one is about, to Mr. Stone, about the 2005 sample return from Mars. What is now planned? Is it one big spacecraft launched by Ariane 5? Or is it two different probes, one from ESA, one from NASA, launched separately?
Okay, addressing the question of lander on Mars Express. Mars Express is a new experience for us. It's very fast. So the concept was studied in parallel with releasing the announcement of opportunity and almost selecting instruments. So when you were talking about four landers, this was the original concept at the time when we really didn't understand the system but issued the announcement of opportunity. Turned out that the orbit that was planned at the time is not suitable for the orbiter payload, and it was somewhat optimistic. So as a second step, there was a second announced. The landers originally submitted, the four, are not being considered. There was a second announcement of opportunity for a lander up to 60 kilograms in July. Three proposals were received. They are at present assessed from a technological point of view, and also from a scientific point of view. I believe this is feasible from the technical point of view, up to 60 kilograms, and there are viable proposals. The question is funding. It is not within the ESA absolute fixed budget of 150 million accounting units, which includes full cost, including launch, including operations, for one Martian year, two Earth years, or possibly even for another 2 years, serving as a communication link for other landers, as Stone said. It's not within that, so private funding by the proposers has to be found, and that will be the critical issue to be decided within the next few months. So one lander up to 60 kilograms still open.
The Mars architecture is currently under study. We've had a very intensive activity over the last several months, which has has looked at this architecture, which I just showed. There have been discussions between NASA and CNES about about an Ariane 5 launch vehicle and a French-built spacecraft, orbiting spacecraft with a sample return. That discussion is still underway between NASA and CNES, and I would hope that some decision could be made by the end of this year. And that, but obviously the architecture that I showed does in fact reflect that particular approach. But that's not the only approach. If that particular arrangement doesn't work, then we will have to use separate launch vehicles to launch the orbiter and the lander.
Rodney Buckland, Open University. Very interested in Beagle, of course, as you know. Is there not an opportunity here? I was watching these missions to Mars every 26 months, a mixture of orbiters and landers. Is there not an opportunity emerging which I can ask each of the space agency representatives to give me an immediate assessment of, to get a private sector consortium to build, operate, and rent to the space agencies the telecommunications infrastructure in Mars orbit that could provide a service to all those orbiters and landers, providing the infrastructure in one simple spacecraft which would then not need to be duplicated in every space agency mission that goes to Mars every 26 months. Is that an interesting idea for you as essentially a cost saver, but also an opportunity for the private sector to participate in essentially Mars exploration?
Well, ESA being new in the business for Mars, but making the step 2003, and that has the potential. The prime mission funded by ESA includes operation for one Martian year, two Earth years, but with the telecommunication package on board and some collaboration with the Italian Space Agency, brings the potential of using lander spacecraft as a relay also for launch opportunities in 2000, other agencies 2003 or even 2005. Yes, the potential is there. Discussions are ongoing, but there are no firm agreements reached yet.
Planet B was launched, and it will be operate for the orbit insertion in next October, 1 year in Mars orbit, so the 2 years in Earth year, the spacecraft will be operated. And after that, we still don't have any further Mars missions, so we have no cooperated plan with other spacecraft after the 2003 around the Mars. But anyway, generally, it's a very good idea to save the money or something to cooperate for the relay or the communication system. But actually, it's very difficult to do so because each spacecraft mission is conducted by each country. One of the mission will be, if the one of the mission was were cancelled, then the other mission should be stopped or another design should do again. So it's very difficult to cooperate for the mission operation for the such kind of the planetary mission.
Yes, really go to the 2005. We can use telecommunication, but principally, if it is just we stick to the sample return, it's probably not very necessary for us.
One thing that in the architecture study that was identified was the attractiveness of an Ares stationary communication system, which has significant advantages in terms of being able to have 24-hour-a-day contact with the systems on the surface, could provide very high bandwidth return to Earth so that one could have a much more interactive capability with the systems on Mars. I have to believe that that's going to happen someday. The question is where and when is the investment going to be made? Is this something that in fact would be sufficiently attractive to private investment, or is it something that the governments are going to have to invest in? That's an issue which clearly needs to be sorted out. If there could be private investment in a way that would be satisfactory in terms of the investors, clearly that would help the agency budgets a great deal, and would provide the opportunity to establish an internet node at Mars. So we'd have something called Dot Mars.
Would you support such a commercial mission to put one or more orbiting data relay satellites around Mars over the indefinite future? Or would you see that as competitive to JPL's business?
I think there's a misunderstanding. You know, all the landers that are landing on Mars are going to be built by private industry. So as far as I'm concerned, that's already privatized. This lander is not going to be owned by a private company, but the government is going to, we're basically going to contract to have it built. And most of the systems going to Mars will be built by private contractors. So I have no problem with private industry being an important part of the exploration program. I think it is very important. And the challenge, I think, is finding a way from a standpoint of private ownership to find a way that's attractive to the investors. That's also something that, that the governments can sign up to. And I think that's a challenge that we jointly face. And I can't speak for the government because I'm not the government myself either. I'm just saying what I think I see, and that is there is an opportunity, but it has to be explored between the government, NASA, and private industry to see if there is an arrangement that makes such private ownership, not which I consider separate from the fact that most of this is already being built by private industry. I mean, JPL's not building the orbiting spacecraft. JPL's not building the lander that's going to Mars in January.
Along that same line, what about simply making modular instrumentation, either for communications, for propulsion or whatever, that one contractor has got a good system on, and then you simply keep selling them to everybody else's space agency to use? Is that a practical application, especially when each of you has companies within your own country or within your among your members in Europe who all want to have a piece of the action as far as making making the instrumentation or making the communication systems or whatever?
Well, certainly in the U.S., one thing that we are dedicated to is as the technology is developed, that it becomes something industry can provide for anyone who builds a space system. That, for instance, the deep space transponders are not built by JPL. They're built by a private company. Any spacecraft contractor can buy that transponder for deep space missions. As we develop more advanced deep space transponders, those will be produced by private industry and will be available to anyone who wants to buy such systems. So like, it's a critical part of the investment the U.S. is making is to invest in such a way that industry has the capability of providing this capability to anyone, not just to government.
All hardware on ESA spacecraft is built by European industry. Occasionally, if not available in Europe, or if there's a vast cost difference, we are allowed, our shareholders, the European government, the member states, are allowed to purchase non-European hardware. Our basic constitution, the ESA Convention, states as one of the objectives of the agency to foster European industry. And therefore, this is a very, very important part of ESA, and industry is a very important partner among that, and that we have to observe this as part of the business. That is basically it. In the science program in ESA, we have had very good cooperation with NASA, the Cassini-Huygens mission, Ulysses, SOHO, various others, and there you arrange at a pro quo, bring in the strengths of each side. So, for example, the Ulysses spacecraft carried the power supply, radioisotope thermal generator, from provided by NASA. That is certainly possible within a cooperative arrangement.
One last question.
Okay. Well, I think that the actual situation, we are paying maybe the very small fantasy of our economists and our politicians. I mean, you can simply go to see an entrepreneur and ask him to put some billions of dollars in enterprise where he can see the return of his investment, as it was said by the Japanese speaker this morning. So the problem will be maybe to find out some new tool of credit. I mean, space is an investment with a very long time of return. So the real question is, are we able to make a plan on two or three simple programs that can give a return even in 30 years? I speak, for instance, about the energy from space, from resources, mining resources on Moon and on the asteroids. If the answer is yes, we can involve the banks in this process. We can involve the insurances. We can involve those institutions that manage really a lot of money and try to design with their maybe a new money, a new credit tool that can be spent. Something like a space program bonus, like in all the nations we have Thesaurus bonus and something like that. You can make new kind of popular actions and build on these new tools a new space economy. If a new space economy will start, it will create economy. The economy is the registration of the human work, and if we give people chance to work, economy will increase and not decrease. So space is not an expense, but is an opportunity. Thank you.
I would like to thank the panel.